morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV KRNW. I'm Jeremy Werner. Joining me this morning is writer, author, and affiliate professor at the University of Washington, Dr. Robin DiAngelo. She'll be speaking at the Charles Johnson Theater on the campus of Northwest Missouri State University next Wednesday at 7 p.m. to discuss her book, White Fragility, as well as several other topics. Thank you for joining me this morning, Dr. DiAngelo. You know, we'll get to your book in a bit, but outside of that, what is it that, you know, you're specifically looking to talk about next week?
I'll be helping people understand the concept of systemic racism and challenging the way many of us are taught to think about racism as individual, intentional, conscious acts of meanness. And, you know, moving forward in 2022, we really have to be able to engage with a little more complexity and nuance than that simplistic idea. And then once we've established that, you know, it's in the water, we've all absorbed ideas and ideology that are rooted in racism, then we can begin to ask ourselves, each and every one of us individually, well, what does that look like in my life? You know, how might I be unawarely and unintentionally expressing racist ideas, and how might I interrupt that?
So as a national author and someone who's probably spoken at dozens of universities across the country, does your approach to the discussion change across the country? Like when you go to a school to discuss systematic racism, does that change whether it's a rural area or a suburban area, red, blue, yeah, et cetera?
Not fundamentally. In order to understand what I'm talking about, particularly because it's so sensitive and so emotionally charged, I've never met anyone who doesn't have an opinion on this topic, and usually a pretty strongly held opinion. In order to challenge the kind of mainstream way we're taught to think about it, you really have to scaffold it. You have to start at that kind of basic and then build on that. And so my starting point would vary based on the audience, what they've had before, how wide a range of perspectives is in the audience. But the basic concepts and the challenges I offer are consistent.
While White Fragility is probably your most well-known book, you did release a book last year that I kind of want to talk about. It's called Nice Racism, How Progressive White People Perpetuate Racial Harm. In terms of what you're talking about next week, what book would you say is more likely to be a part of the main focal point next week, White Fragility or Nice Racism?
Yeah, you know, I'm being asked to talk about Nice Racism. I make a claim in White Fragility that is provocative and that I'm often asked about, and that is that perhaps well-meaning white progressive people cause the most daily harm. And I'm going to imagine that most of the people in the audience, it's likely to be a primarily white audience. It typically is. And most of the people there will be well-meaning white folks. And, you know, I'm not a white nationalist, so the manifestation of my conditioning into the system doesn't look like white nationalism, but it does look like something. And it's on me to you know, continually try to identify that and challenge that. So based on the audience I'm expected to be in front of and what I've been asked to do, it'll focus more on Nice Racism. But you can't really get there without starting with that foundational framework that comes out of White Fragility, the book White Fragility.
In your experience when delivering these speeches, what kind of crowd would you say is most receptive to the message?
It's surprising. There are people who are strongly identify as anti-racist, and sometimes they can be the most challenging because their identity is so attached to this idea that they're not open to the reality that this is a lifelong process. I'm never going to be finished and done and, you know, officially declared free of all racist conditioning. Even as I challenge it, the messages are coming back at me. Other people who have a very strong negative reaction actually in the beginning can move to a place. I often get emails from people who say, you know, the first time I read your book, I just couldn't go there. But as it, I sat with it and thought about it and, you know, engaged with other works that you recommend, I do understand now and I can hear it. So it's really hard to say.
For perspective, what would you say is a very common form of subtle or unrecognized racism that a lot of people are guilty of?
I think that there's two aspects of it I would identify. And one is the certitude that we're free of it. If I'm certain that I'm free of it, I'm probably going to respond in two different ways if you, you know, offer me some feedback or challenge my idea that I'm free of it. So the first thing I might do is offer up all the evidence, what I call credentialing, all of the reasons why I couldn't possibly be racist in any way. And unfortunately, none of that evidence is convincing to people who understand systemic racism. So that's going to be frustrating. And then the other thing is just defensiveness, feeling unjustly accused or misunderstood and disengaging, right? Putting up a wall and refusing to reflect or consider. And I'm only offering, it is a provocative and challenging framework based on how most of us are taught to understand racism. But I'm just asking people to be willing to grapple with it. You know, if you picked up this framework, what I would call an anti-racist framework, and I certainly didn't invent it, and I'm not the only person offering it, but if you simply picked up this lens and put it on, how would it change how you make sense of what you're seeing and then what kind of actions you might take? And if we're not willing to do that, we're really not going to move forward.
So for, you know, there are people who prefer to discuss racism or believe in racism through a very certain viewpoint. That viewpoint is that the racism that happens now in 2022 or has in the past few years, it's mainly to white people now. They believe in anti-white racism. Do you believe there is any validity to those claims?
Well, I don't think so. I'm not sure who to attribute this to, but it has been said when you're used to 100%, 98 feels oppressive. If you look at the halls of power in this country, they are overwhelmingly 80% upwards held by white people and within that, white men. It's just simply not true that we're losing power. It's not about numbers. It's about position. And to be willing to look at how you've been socialized into an unfair system is not actually a terrible thing that's being done to you. You're not being accused of anything. It's just looking around and seeing what's going on. Patriarchy is another example, right? That, you know, it's not really useful to think about it as good people versus bad people. We live in a patriarchal society. So how does that shape us? What could we do about it? If we refuse to look at it, we certainly can't change it.
Well, building off that, how much does your messaging the different aspects of how you convey your message change in an election year like 2022?
I don't think that it does. I mean, all of that feeds into the moment that you're in, and you have to be aware of it. You have to be ready and willing to engage. But again, the basic framework I'm offering is consistent. The challenges within that, the requests that people of color have asked of us, those are consistent.
So kind of building off this year being an election year, I think it's safe to say that when you look back at 2020, for social issues at the ballot box, a lot of it was dominated by the Black Lives Matter movement that summer. And this year, it's almost kind of a repeat where what happens in the summer dictates everything going forward. Because at the beginning of 2022, a lot of discussion that was taking place was education, inflation. And as soon as Roe v. Wade was overturned, that kind of became the dominating topic. Would you say there's any kind of correlation or connection between those two election cycle topics heading into this November?
I think what it shows so clearly that we're not on an arc of, you know, ever ascending progress, that these dynamics are very cyclic and circular. It's a constant push-pull. You know, when this work was actually harder to do during Obama's presidency, when, you know, you heard a lot of the narrative of us being post-racial. The presidency following that made it very, very clear we are not post-racial. And I think it underscores a key message that people like me are offering, and that is we can never be complacent. Our work is never done. Look where we are in 2022. Look where we are after the challenges and uprisings of the summer of 2020.
And what does post-racial look like to you?
It's an interesting question because I haven't seen it in my lifetime. I think maybe the simplest way to answer that is to say when our outcomes cannot be predicted by race, when inequities cannot be predicted by race, when who's consistently at the group level, at the top versus at the bottom, cannot be predicted by race, we will certainly be in a different place than we are now.
So before the overturning of Roe v. Wade and abortion became kind of the huge topic, there was a talk about education, and there's kind of been this talk, I'm not sure when it started, but it's an overall discussion about America and how it's taught in school, with many concerned about how America is being painted or how it isn't being painted. So the question I have is, do you feel like what children are taught at an elementary level has any effect on how they eventually view racism in America? So for instance, do you believe that a lack of teaching about slavery being a part of America's past impacts views of racism when they get older?
Yes. I think it starts actually much earlier than that. Research has shown that as early as 3 and 4, most children understand that it's better in our society to be white than it is not to be white. They're absorbing those messages very, very early, and to not talk about race is as powerful a message as talking about race, but not in a way that you want. You don't equip children to engage with any understanding. And that makes them very susceptible. You know, white nationalists are recruiting young white boys at an alarming rate. And if we haven't been talking to them about race, they're going to have a much harder time resisting that. And there's this idea that a teach about our past is to shame white people, but we wouldn't be beyond human enslavement if there were not advocates and allies and abolitionists, if there weren't white people. I mean, black people couldn't free themselves. White people had to do what it took to make that happen. And so it's not a shameful exploration. It's actually, it can be very liberating and transformative. You know, here's some role models for us. It's not all negative. And I'm well aware that racism exists, but I don't struggle with shame about having been socialized into it. That's not a choice I was given. And I wouldn't have chosen that, but that's how I was socialized. And so it's on me now to take responsibility to challenge it. And none of that is inherently shameful. Are there momentary feelings of guilt? Likely. but it's not a constructive place to get stuck in. It's not, it doesn't serve anybody. And the best antidote to guilt is reparative action.
What is the overall message you want people to take away from your lecture next week? And do you have a message for people who may not be able to attend, or I'm sure this is happening, possibly foaming at the mouth and anger right now?
For the people that are foaming at the mouth angry, I would say just breathe. I am not so powerful that I could brainwash you. And I simply ask you to grapple with a challenging concept. For me, that's the meaning of life, is to be intellectually and emotionally challenged, particularly if the goal is towards a more just society that I play a part in. But the overall message would be change your question, and this would be to white people. I am a white person, so coming as a white person speaking to a primarily white audience, change your question from if you've been shaped by the forces of systemic racism to how have you been shaped. If the question is if, most white people are going to answer, no, I haven't been affected by it at all. The only message I ever got was that everybody's equal, and I don't see difference in all of that. But if the question is how, then we start from, you know, understanding the premise that it's unavoidable. And so let me start that journey, that lifelong journey of trying to identify how and trying to change that. And again, it's difficult at times. It's also exciting, thrilling, exhilarating, and deeply, profoundly meaningful.
All right, Dr. DeAngelo, thank you for joining me this morning. Once again, that was writer, author, and affiliate professor at the University of Washington, Dr. Robin DeAngelo. She'll be speaking in the Charles Johnson Theater next Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the campus of Northwest Missouri State University. She'll be going over her books, White Fragility, as well as Nice Racism, and several other topics. I'm Jeremy Werner, and this has been your morning conversation right here on KXCV, KRNW.